We don't want just strong, good firefighters. We want them to be efficient. We want them to be intelligent. We want them to be resilient. We want them to be all of these things. And how do we incorporate that into 12 weeks?
Welcome back to the Firefighter Craftsmanship Podcast, where we guide you through the psychology of high performance, expand your mindset, and strengthen your resilience. And today we're very excited to have a face-to-face or podcast conversation with Captain Danielle Landholm with the Omaha Fire Department. I've had some fun conversations over the years in relation to Fire Academy training and changing some culture. So very excited to talk with you today. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So yeah, Nebraska, what's, Nebraska and even really Colorado, we're kind of stuck in the middle. We have like a really heavy East Coast influence in the fire service, and we have a pretty heavy West Coast influence in the fire service. And then you got this massive portion in the middle of the country. And the farther east you go, or even the South, has their own kind of defined culture in the fire service. But the farther you're kind of in the middle is we take things from both sides of the country, which is kind of, I think it's kind of a cool place to be, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah, definitely. We're kind of stuck right there in the middle, and we get to see all of it right here in the middle.
Indeed. Yeah. So how long have you been on the job?
So I started with Omaha a little over 12 years ago. I came from the volunteer world. My dad was a volunteer firefighter growing up, so I started to have an interest in it when I was about 14. And joined the volunteer department when I was 18. And I had it all set up. I was going to go be a career firefighter. And my little grandpa said, "You're not going to go to college?" And I thought, "Well, no, because I'm going to go be a firefighter." And he says, "But what if you don't?" And I hadn't really thought about that yet because I'd already decided. And so kind of started to reflect on where I was, and I decided to go to college and became a music teacher, and I taught music and PE in the school system in the Omaha area for a couple years before I started and landed myself a spot in Omaha. So,
Okay, cool. That's a fun journey. I did not know that. So,
yeah.
you got in the game pretty early though, right? If you started volunteering when you were 18, did you volunteer like all the way through college and then while you were teaching school?
Yep. So I stayed on the volunteer department and served in several different positions there prior to my gig in Omaha. And then I stayed in Bennington through some of that time. And it wasn't until I started having babies that I had to kind of wrap up some of those things that took a lot of my time and put some focus into my family. So,
Yeah, it's important, right? Family is important. And how is that now that you're, a captain, a big muckety muck with Omaha Fire Department, being
Yeah,
also
so
a mom and a wife, that's a lot.
yeah, it's been an interesting transition as I've made it finally into the training division. I started and was promoted in suppression and was moved to the captain of one of the busiest medic units in the city. And I went into that spot believing in what we were doing as a union with the EMS promotions. And I started there, and my husband and I had that kind of grueling conversation about what does this look like if this is what you're going to go do. And it had been a long time since we had medics as captains in the city of Omaha. We lost that in a CIR contract several years before, and so we gained that back. And so also that kind of what is the expectation of the paramedic captain? What does that job look like? And we're building that piece of it as well. And so the conversation kind of went, well, it's not going to be pretty. If I'm going to go there, I'm going to be tired and I'm going to need some time. And so he actually made a career change to try to help with that a little bit, and he started working from home, which turned out to not be such a great idea, because then all of a sudden he knew what I was up to for 10 years. On my days off, he's like, "Do you just sleep all day, or what do you do all day?" And so we made it through that. But it kind of came down to I was sitting at the station, and I had a call. I would describe it as the worst day of my career. That was like the pivotal moment in my entire career, starting all the way back where I made a decision that had an adverse consequence. And it wasn't the call itself, it was the leadership role and the decision making and saying, how did I not see that I wasn't right? And where did I get myself into a place where I thought I was not wrong? And so, I had already made up my mind in this incident, and the adverse effects came barreling back to us. And so I just sat there and reflected and said, wow, am I burnt out? Am I too tired? Am I complacent? Am I, where am I at in my leadership in this position that I'm in, that I'm in this spot right now? And I have a rock solid paramedic shift supervisor who is single-handedly changing EMS culturally in the Omaha Fire Department. And he actually came and sat down with us and talked through the whole thing and kind of smoothed it over. And he said, why don't we take a break? I thought, I'll take a break, whatever. I'll go to the engine. He says, no, I think you need to leave the house. I said, I don't need to leave the house. That's not going to help me. I need to be with my people and I need to be in my territory and I need to be at my place. And he says, no, I think you need to leave the house. So I went to one of the stations that I'd worked at for a while, and I was assuming the role of captain on the engine. And I found myself talking and nobody was listening. And so I had an opportunity to kind of reflect on what does that look like? Why don't they care what I have to say? Well, I just realized that I'd kind of fallen into the same thing, that I was getting stuck in the gripes, and things were living out pretty good for them, so they didn't really have a space to hear it. And so I really kind of started to reflect on what I wanted out of my career, what I wanted out of my family, and really took a long time to really dive in. And I kind of took some opportunity to read a book that I had been trying to read for 3 years, and I just kind of tried to bring it down. And in that whole process, I figured out it wasn't that I was, I didn't have a traumatic incident that was hurting me, and I didn't have any of these single moments that were really hurting me as much as I was looking at myself and saying, wow, I'm at a 10. And I'm at a 10 all the time, and I can't bring it down. I couldn't sleep at night, not because I was having bad dreams or anything like that. I just couldn't sleep. I was just always in that high sense of, or in this high state of alert, that it was affecting how I was at my house and what kind of person I was bringing into my home and the way I was reacting to my kids. And I started to see it in my kids. I call my boy the diabolical product of Medic One, because he's quick to anger, very fast and analytical, and can take care of anything at any time. And that's how I felt he was brought into the world, was in that status. But I really kind of sat and journaled and said, what do I want out of my career, and how can I serve my family and still have a rewarding and satisfying career? And about 3 or 4 weeks later, a spot opened in the training division, and I took it reluctantly. I cried the whole way home from the station my day after I left, and came out here into transition into this. And I'd always kind of seen myself wanting to come out to the training division at some point in time. I thought I would just detach for a class, and but came out here and made the move. So
Wow, there's a lot of stuff in there. That's amazing. I haven't
crazy.
ever heard that story. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I think that that's going to resonate. It certainly resonated with me. And I know it's going to resonate with some of our listeners for sure. And I think, I mean, you talk about first right away is, the burden of leadership. And that's not necessarily tied to rank. In your case, it was maybe both. It was tied to rank and it was tied to basic skills, and it was tied to the 911 call that you were on and what transpired on that, and you have to be self-reflective in this game. And if, and that's really, really hard for a lot of us. It was really, really hard for me, to be completely honest with you, until I started to look at promoting. I was not an introspective person. I just did what I did because that's what I do. because it was too hard, right? It's too hard to like look internally and be, we're obviously all very, very critical of ourselves, especially in emergency services. And so like you can bust me cap all you want, but I'm gonna be way harder on myself than you can ever be on me, you know? But at the same time, like a lot of us aren't very good at saying, you maybe you come to terms with it, maybe you don't, maybe just beat yourself up, which is not amazing either. But a lot of us aren't great about like growing to that next level, other than in the basic skills world, right? Because it's really easy for us to measure, or in the fitness world, it's easy for me to track my gains and see how many times did I get in the gym. But like that internal struggle, which you just laid out awesome, around that 10-year mark, and I'd say that's pretty common, you know, especially in the fire services, that 10-year bell curve. You see it at 3, 4 years, right? You know everything. Nobody can teach you anything because you've been to all these awesome regional conferences, and then you've ran one or two fires and you think you're pretty dope, you know? And then at some
And
point, like it catches up.
I had like that badge of honor too, that I was like, I'm good at what I do because I work really, really hard to be good. I get involved, I read, I teach, I get involved in projects and committees, and I be a part of all of these things to make sure that I'm capable and that I can do those, do what's expected of me. And so, some of that was coming at a cost. I could say, wow, I was really good at work, but what was it costing me? And where was it costing me? Well, it was at my house and in my kids and in my family. And it's so easy to piggyback on that. Well, I've got a career, this is the cost of the career. This is the cost of the job. But being good at your job doesn't have to cost you your family, and it shouldn't cost you your family. And that's a big emphasis that we're bringing into the training academy as well. So,
That's awesome. Let's pull on that thread for sure. So like where do we go from here? I mean, where?
So I came out to the training division with a few ideas. I'd actually, the station I worked at, we had candidates on the back of the engine and on the back of the truck that rotated in every year. It was kind of a revolving door for that spot. It was a high place for, it's known as the fire station, right? They're going to get a lot of fires. It's in the northern part of Omaha, which is a lower poverty area. In some areas, there's obviously little pockets in there, but it's known for its high call volume and high acuity runs. And so we had a lot of candidates coming through there, and I was kind of watching where they were sitting. And I considered myself to be pretty hands-on in their education from an EMS standpoint, but I really wanted to know what they thought in their transition. What was it like when you came from the academy into suppression? What things do you wish you would have known? What things did you feel like you needed more of? And what stuff did you find that didn't serve you any purpose? I really kind of dove into it with them and asked a lot of questions because I wanted to know what I was getting myself into when I transitioned out to the training division, especially because the perception I had was 12 years old, 11 years old when I came here. And so one of the things that they had really dug into was just more of that cultural preparation. So I came out here with a few ideas. That one of the captains that I work with out here actually used to be my engine captain as well. And so I came out here to a great team. The battalion chief that is the battalion chief of the training division is new out here as well. And so we kind of went into it all together. We had a big staff meeting, and I said I'd really like to focus on some ideas. And we went into the training academy no different than any other planning project. We set out goals for ourselves, what kinds of things we were going to have to do to accomplish those goals, what we wanted to improve upon, and how are we going to achieve that. So, one of the biggest things I found was I sat down at my computer. I was ready to go. I was like, okay, I can do this. And then there was nothing written out. So I asked the other captain out here. I said, hey, where do you guys keep this? And he's like, oh, well, so and so had it in their folder, and that's what they did. So they took it with them. So I kind of reached out and started spreading out my tentacles everywhere, trying to find as much as I could. And what I found was that there was a really strong deficit in collaboration. Not that people weren't working together when they were here, it was that once they were gone, everything went with them. And so I thought, wow, how are we ever going to build on something and improve upon stuff and ask for money and ask for resources if we're not sure where that education is headed? And we know when you hit the streets, there's a thousand ways to do the same thing, and everybody's says their idea is better than the next person or so on. And it's always this evolving process. But we would sit down and we're like, okay, I learned it this way 10 years ago. You learned it this way 20 years ago, and you learned it this way 6 years ago. Which one do we like the best? And that's the one we want to go with. We teach them that, and then we give them the opportunity to see all the other ways instead of proving that there's only one way to do something. Hey, here's three different ways. We're going to focus on this one while we teach you, and we're going to give you the opportunity to practice it so much that you get to decide between these three ways which one works best for you. If at the end of the job you get it done and you did it safely and you did it efficiently, right? We want efficient and effective firefighters, then you did a job well done. And that's what we wanted. So we kind of started talking about this collaborative effort and saying, how do we get all of the things in the same place? And that's where we birthed the Google Drive in the training division. It was a big deal. It's still quite a transition. But we started putting all of our stuff into the drive. And so now if I have a sick kiddo and I need to be gone for the day, but it was my day to teach, all of my teaching material is in there and someone else can teach it and they can carry on. And the whole day doesn't just halt because there wasn't anything happening. We also wanted to incorporate EMS training days into our training academy. There was a pretty significant deficit in EMS education. And we were talking about, like, how do we keep from ruining our kids when they come out, right? They've got all this expectation that there's just going to be everything's fire related, but yet here we are at 66,000 runs and only 2,000 of them are fire related. Where's the other? Where's the rest of them? Oh, that's right. They live right here in EMS. And how do we prepare you to function as an EMT? And we're looking at this big picture in the city where the EMTs are becoming relied upon more and more. They're putting them in the driver position in the ambulances. They're expecting them to solidify patient care. We're putting an emphasis on basic skills to improve life expectancy and life and outcomes. And how do we put that emphasis on them now in the training academy so that it becomes second nature to them, no different than putting their SCBA on? Because that skill is going to be just as important as it is the SCBA. And so we started incorporating EMS training days. Fortunately for me, the EMS training captain was also new out here. So he bought right into our ideas and developed EMS days for throughout the duration of the academy. And now when we have any drills or any scenarios, any evolutions, we make a medical station as well. So you've got fire suppression, you've got ventilation, you've got search and rescue, but you also have your medical group. And their expectation is that they perform all the things around that patient and put them in the ambulance and take them to the hospital. And so it's been really fun to kind of see that evolve. And then, of course, we wanted more hands-on time, right? We'd gotten into this place that when you have an ever-evolving staff, you have limitations on your staff, you have limitations on financial pieces, resources, any of those just factors that keep things from going the big picture that you want them to be. We kind of got lost in some of that hands-on application because it is so much work and it's so labor intensive. How do we get that back? And so, those were kind of our big goals when we went into this academy. And then we did whatever we could to make them happen. And that resulted in a high level of satisfaction from our training staff, really solid outcomes out of our recruits. I felt like we were doing something positive when we could tell them what drill we were going to run, and they could go set it up themselves, and they were ready to go. It freed up some of our hands and made it so that we could do that. When they felt so comfortable with their equipment that they were able to fix something if it wasn't going right. We were starting to see the evolution of those things, and we're like, okay, we got to stick with that. We need that. We need to keep that. So I called them kind of our guinea pig class, because we went into it with a lot of ideas, but we wanted everything to be intentional. We wanted all of the things that we took to them to matter and to have some sort of outcome. And so, yeah, that was a lot too.
Yeah, no, really great stuff. And I mean, you have some really key points in there right away, which is collaboration, the first one. And luckily, it sounds like you had a great support system within your organization, which is very, very important, right? From the I don't know if you have a training firefighter or, but all ranks all the way up to that training battalion chief, where, that's sometimes unfortunately the barrier, because some of this stuff is really scary, right? If we're going to try to change cultures, especially in basic training and fire academies, as people enter our organization, it's like, well, a lot of times we feel like we only have one shot, which is kind of true, but also not true, because we should be training as an organization. We should have like cultural values as an organization that make the basics even better, right? But it is scary to change some of that stuff at the ground level and say, hey, just give me a shot. Like, we're gonna have a guinea pig class, and we're going to track everything really, really well. And we're going to learn some lessons, and some will be wins, and some will be lessons learned. And we're going to make it better or not do it again, right? And
You
it's
want to
really,
talk
really
about things that
cool.
make people happy? Take the tight schedule and then add a bunch of documentation to it. That really does it for everybody. But when it served a purpose and it came with intent, we were able to see the progress grow. And so yeah. So now we're in the second class, and actually the third class, but the second full 12-week academy, and we're reaping the benefits of a lot of the planning that we put in place with this guinea pig class. So
Yeah, it's good. And it's really important to have frameworks. It's great. And I recently went through a process where I realized like my record keeping is terrible, and so it's like, oh man, frameworks, they're so brutal for some people to create. And then, but once you were like, what did we do there? And you go back and you have this really well laid out calendar and plan and framework and documentation, and all of those things were built, it was absolutely worth the amount of pain and sweat and
Well, and
tears, right?
it's funny, and I think it's worth adding that, the very first conversation we had, I got your name from a firefighter here in Omaha, and because I said I need some help. I have some ideas. I don't really know if that's, I felt like some of my stuff was kind of dated because I'd been on the medic unit for so long, and I just didn't really know exactly what it all should look like. And I felt like the conversation that you and I had the first time I called you, it was almost like the pardon to be creative and to put emphasis on things that matter outside of just basic skills, but also the human and what we're trying to get. We don't want just strong, good firefighters. We want them to be efficient. We want them to be intelligent. We want them to be resilient. We want them to be all of these things. And how do we incorporate that into 12 weeks so that they go out there? Because that very first day could be the day, or it could be a day, or it could be, no matter what, it's going to be a pivotal moment in their career. And so how do we make it so that they're ready for that in when they are also supposed to have a whole year of on-the-job training? So, but it was like that very first conversation just gave me that pass to be creative, to say, yeah, you can have fun. And I called a mentor of mine the first week who had been in the training division, and a former captain of mine, and I said, do I have to be mean all the time? Like, I'm personable, and I want to know them, and I want to talk to, like, I want to know what drives them, and I want to know what their concerns are, and because that's what teachers do. We figure out what the thing is and how people learn, and isn't that part of retention, you know? And thank goodness he said, if you be yourself, that's the best version they're going to get, you know? And oh, how, you know, and there isn't a truer statement there. And he said, if you're not yourself, they're going to see right through you anyway. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have to have a high level of expectation and really high standards. And I can have all of those things and still be personable and attentive to what their needs are as an educator, and how I base my curriculum and how I base our drills and instruction to meet the needs of an ever-changing group of people so that they're successful, especially when we say, okay, now we're going to take a bunch of people who did really well on a written test and we're going to pull you out of the classroom, you know, where you learn best, and we're going to put your hands on everything. How do we balance so that way they can still academically succeed from the book, but also have a high skill set when they leave here in 12 weeks?
Yeah, so another batch of just fantastic points. And I think you're spot on as far as we have a lot of cultural ingrained stuff in us because we're a paramilitary business, right? And we think that we have to try to act like drill instructors sometimes. And I certainly went through that when I was assigned with our training division of, man, you really have to find your style. And then at the end of the day, I think if you just clearly communicate to the recruits, like, hey, I'm going to treat you like a person and I'm stoked that you're here, but you're also going to earn it, right? And just like you, like I'm going to have good days, I'm going to be stoked, and I'm going to have bad days where I am not excited. And it might be because of the quality of work that's being put out maybe on the drill ground. And then, you know, like one thing that we certainly did as an instructor cadre, which was really, really formative for everybody. And that's kind of been the case for the most part with our organization, but if they were doing penalty stuff, opportunities to learn, we would call it, right? So we're doing push-ups or something like that. All the cadre and all the instructors do them as well. So it was, we were never putting them in a situation. We worked out with them every single day. Every single thing that we did, other than the actual drills and the learning and all that stuff, that's where we were in the instructor role. But anything else, we were embedded with them and we were showing them, like, hey, this is what the fire service looks like, because when you get out online, like you operate as a crew and we are part of your crew right now. Yeah, we're, you know, the leaders of this thing. And we know what's coming and we're going to tell you most of the time what's coming, but sometimes we're not going to tell you. And that's on purpose to create the uncertainty, just like we don't know when the 911 call is going to go off, like all of those sorts of things. But, you know, we never use things like bunker drills as penalty. And we, you know, we made that very, very clear. Like, hey, if I yell bunker drill in the middle of the class, there is 100% reason for it. And that reason might be, well, we don't know when the tones are going to go off, and you better know how to put your stuff on, right? And so everything was really, really well mapped out. And you get a lot of leadership capital by doing that. And like, I didn't win any of the workouts, right? We got all these young psychopaths, and like, I'm just there to get a good workout in. Like, I don't gotta win. I don't care, right? And so, like, but they're sweating, serving, growing, challenging ourselves as the instructor group, you know, going first. Like, hey, if we're doing ladders today, the instructors better know how to throw ladders, right? And you better know how to throw ladders in multiple different domains. So for me, who's 6'2", it's pretty easy for me to throw a 24. I just have to have the butt of it hit the ground and it stands up because I'm so tall. But
Tall.
if I have a recruit that's 5'4", right, and they were 120 pounds, I better know how to teach them how to throw ladders. And so I think that like a lot of that starts way back as like you said, what are the goals of this thing? And does the academy or the basic skills training or any training, whether it's online or not, Does it meet what they actually need to do their job and to serve the public that we said we were going to serve? And I
Right.
think that we lose sight of that. It's like, well, I'm going to make it the hardest ever, so that way they can say it's so hard. But then they come out online and the captains and lieutenants are like, dude, that I got to start over because you didn't actually teach them anything. And unfortunately, that
Yep.
happens all over the country. Like I've seen it with my own eyeballs. You know, it's more of a penalty. And you got to earn the right to get out there. But man, the point is like teach them something. And like you said, you only have 12 weeks. Like in the end of the day, that's not a long time to teach them all the
No, it
stuff
goes really fast.
for sure. Absolutely. So there's my soapbox, right?
But it's a good one. I kind of chewed on that piece where you were talking about, making sure you're teaching them something. And I know we put a heavy sense of focus on this sense of urgency and being able to think fast and being able to act fast, but they also have to have the part where they can do it slow first. That's what they're here for, right? They're learning that basic step so that way they know how to do it safe and efficiently and what they're looking for, so that way they can be effective when it's time, and how what do those building blocks look like. And we've got a huge array of people and a huge array of backgrounds. Some people have worked as military firefighters, and some of them used to be teachers and had never done a thing in related to the fire department ever a day in their life, and they're here. And so how do you satisfy the needs of both of those people in the same place? And so that's been a really fun transition as well, and matching up strengths and weaknesses to make sure that everybody is at the is successful. We're challenging those more advanced recruits with the people that need a little boost, and it also helps kind of build their confidence too. Like, okay, I can see someone else doing it. I know I can. And they're, kind of guiding them along the way. And we rotate people into different leadership positions, so that way that person who is the strong one isn't taking that role throughout this entire time, that eventually they can hand it off. And that person with no experience gets an opportunity to see what it feels like to be in that position. We start to build their skills and start to hone in some of those things, and then they get that chance to take it to the next step. So.
Yeah, you learn so much more by teaching, and all of us that have a great opportunity to teach, as you know, you learn so much because of the preparation, but you also just get a different perspective when you're like detached but still engaged of, well, that's how I taught them to do it. And now like looking at it there, that's not a good way for them, for that individual to move hose or to be able to flow and move or to throw ladders or whatever those basic skills are. And you just learn so much. So I think it's great that you know, whether it's like a battalion lead or an engine, however you break out your academies, you know, putting people in charge. And then they start to learn the system too, right? Like how does chain of command work within our organization and what's going to be expected of you? And plus it also starts to get them teaching because we know like some of our recruits come out online to companies that are probably not ideal for a brand new person to go to. And they very well could be in a spot where they've pulled way more hose lines than that company has in the last 10 whatever years. And now they're in a position that hopefully they can establish rapport. And that crew then says, hey, I've never seen that before. And versus being like, don't do it that way because I've never seen it before. Being like, whoa, show me that. Like, why are you doing it that way? And then they want to learn, and now you have an opportunity to teach. And so if you have a culture for 12 weeks where they're teaching each other, they're showing maybe an instructor, not, you know, the thing that used to drive me a little bit crazy is, well, that's not how I learned how to do it. It's like, right? It's like, I'm sure that you have something to teach me. Right now is maybe not that time because on the back of your shirt today it says recruit for Omaha Fire. This is how we're going to teach you as what the basic standard is. I'm going to teach you two or three ways like you talked about already. At some point there might be a way for you to show me like, oh, that was way better. But right now, because we have however many recruits, like we have to have this ditch banks, and so kill team people, because if they bring that attitude out online, they are going to get hammered, right?
Yes,
Like that is not well
definitely.
received. And so,
Yeah.
that's something I think that we kind of failed to admit is, I understand that you can have something to teach me today. This is the reason why we're doing these drills. Maybe you and I stay later, or maybe this is a great time for me to lead you and say, hey, if you have that mentality when you come out online, it's not going to go well for you, even if you're in a great environment, right?
Yeah. It made me think of one of my favorite things that came out of our Guinea Pig Academy, our first group. One of them said to me, "If this is the most efficient and effective way, why does anybody do it any way else?" And I just kind of chuckled and I slapped him on the shoulder and said, "Because it's the way we've always done it." Okay. And so don't go thinking too fast. No. But I said, yeah, that's the thing. There's a place where tactical considerations are being challenged because of this ever-evolving fire dynamic. And we see it in the Fire Safety Research Institute studies and things with the UL. What they're showing us is, hey, our experiences are getting less and less and less, but everything is still changing around us. So how do we form our tactical considerations off of experience alone when we only get a small percentage of it? And so people are challenged in that aspect. So we're kind of taking this grassroots approach to like intelligent firefighting, right? Choosing the right job for the right circumstance, because that's going to be the best way to handle that thing, instead of just like this automaticity that this is the way you're supposed to do it because that's the way you do it. How do we pick the right tactical decision for what we're doing so that way we can evolve past this is the way we do it and this is the way it's always been done to be most efficient and effective.
How do we build in creativity and autonomy with the recruits themselves? Let's just talk about
Yes.
recruits, and have them challenge the narrative, right? So that's
Yeah.
okay. Like, one thing I like to do when I teach ventilation is we, by the end of the module, we start everything from zero. So we start everything from the rig, meaning all the ladders are on the rig, whether it's a an OSB prop that we've built that looks like a ladder bed, coming out of a tower ladder or whatever. But they don't start from the ground. Like, we don't pick up ladders from the ground. They come off of an engine or they come off of a
Yeah.
truck. And so by the end, we talk about like rig to roof. So just that part right there, because we can make up
Yeah.
so much time. That's where you make up the time. You don't make up time on the roof if you're doing vertical ventilation, right? Like
Right.
that part of the thing, once boots hit the roof, it's going to be 60 seconds. That's how long it should take. Boots on the roof, sounding, getting to where we go, make our cut. Communicate, louver, boom, off the roof. That's about 60 to maybe 90 seconds,
Yeah.
based on communication barrier, something along those lines. But you could make up literally 10 minutes. We've seen a 10-minute time gap from the rig just as the ladders hit the building, the training prop, right? And so, one of the things that we like to do there, just as a way to how do we build in creativity, is we say, okay, well, what do we need to get from here to there? Like, what does pre-position, pre-deploy mean? What equipment do we have to get from here to there with saws and a hook and a sounding tool and ladders and blah, 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 based on like department SOP. Well, what are some of the ways that we can do that? And then they'll give you a way, and it's probably coming out of an ISTA textbook. And it's like, cool, okay, go, right? You two are up, go, do that. And then we'll reset. Everybody else is watching. And then you say, okay, like, what were the goods and bads? They self-critique. I just stand back and let them critique each other. All right. Well, what's another way that we can do that? And then you just continue down that way. And so now they
And
start
then
to
they
be like,
brainstorm.
yeah. And it's like, okay, well, is stacking ladders, is pulling ladders off of a rig, setting them on the ground, stacking all your crap on top of it, picking them up, getting your ass kicked the whole way, when it's a 24 to 14 foot roof, like, it's a correct answer for your test, but like, is it the best way, or can we share the load? That, and you start to let them try stuff. And I have learned so much on different ways to carry like a Colorado hook which would be like a trash hook on one end with a New York hook on the other. That's called the Colorado hook, designed by the famous chief, now Chief Brian Brush. And where he combined East Coast and West Coast stuff into one tool. But we've learned some really, really cool stuff just by recruits having the ability to get out there and try and fail and drop it, or be like, holy crap, that totally worked. I'm going to absolutely use that the next time and teach that from here on out. And so there's just a really easy way for to give people some, they have foundational skills. They know how to throw ladders. They've learned how to use chainsaws, like all that sort of stuff. This station is specifically built in our module for them to be creative and for them to test what we've taught them and test what like the textbook has taught them and see what actually works. And then, for us in Colorado, like sometimes we teach the academy and it's snowing and it's crappy out. Like, does that work in that environment, right? Which is about what you're going to have to do when you get out online. And so there's just a really simple way that literally takes no extra time, but you give them the opportunity to try some stuff, get their ass kicked a little bit sometimes, and also be really successful and work through those things. And we say, okay, well, that worked really well for that group. I want you to learn that, but you're not allowed to do it that same way. You got to do it a different way. Right. And so then they're like, but I want to do it that way because I saw that that it worked and now I won't get in trouble and on and on and on. I think that there's a really, really fun way for us to, in a very small module, to start to establish that culture. And then hopefully it's supported when they go out online of like, yeah, man, let's do some stuff. Let's challenge it. Let's bring in new information. Let's challenge it. How does it work with our SOPs? Blah, 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 blah. Very, very fun. And you get really good engagement with people and they're kind of excited because, oh man, I'm not just a robot, you know?
We've had a lot of really good feedback and really good participation from our suppression crews as well to come out and adjunct instruct with us. They're getting their opportunity to see what's going on out here, and they feel energized and excited about being able to be a part of it. We, if they have younger people, we throw them in with the groups, and we allow them to kind of melt in with our instruction cadre so they can see what we're doing, how we're doing things. Because sometimes they'll come out and they're like, I don't know how you want us to teach it. Well, I want you to teach them how you do it. That's what I want you to show them. I want you to expect them to accomplish an objective and do it. And so we've had a lot of fun with the crews coming out, and then it gets their eyes on the recruits, but it also gives the recruits an opportunity to see people from suppression and the tools in suppression and the rigs that they're going to go out to, and some of the personalities, and get a little bit of that perspective as well.
Yeah, for sure. And it's important when you do that. That's an amazing idea for sure, is to also put very clear parameters, right? Like, all right, first parameter is you're not allowed to make them do burpees and push-ups. Like that is the cadre's job, right? We if there's an issue that we need to deal with, we absolutely will deal with that and then pass it on to me, but you're not allowed to dole out punishment, right? And so going boom, that's a way, which is a lot of people's like plan A. Well, they did it to me, so I'm going to do it to them. It's like, well, you can't. Like, you're not allowed to do that. I don't care what your rank is, right? And if you don't like it, then you can't come. It's pretty simple, right? And that's an easy thing for a chief to get behind, and be like, yeah, that seems makes sense to me. Because then it takes some of the bravado out of it. It's like, teach me something, man. Don't just make me do burpees, teach me something.
We went through that too, as part of our development. We took a look at what's the expectation for us as instructors. What do we expect of the primary instructor, a secondary instructor? What do we expect of adjuncts? What do we expect of visitors? What do we, and how do we all work towards the same goal? And so we started giving our suppression crews something to work with, sending out lesson plans, sending out the drill expectation prior to them coming out. So when they come out here, they've already had some time to think it over, look at it, be a little creative. They call in and ask questions. Hey, I was thinking about this. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Or great idea. let's turn it this way a little bit so that way we can, this is where they're at. This is the skill set they need. Okay, got it. But great idea. I'd love to see it again. And so then they come out more than once because they want to move to the next step or and then it kind of takes away that element of surprise because nobody likes to come into the fire station early in the morning and find out you're going to training that day. First day, you've got your lunch plans and you got everything set out. And then they're like, by the way, we need you to go out and teach the recruits today. So we try to make everything well planned, so they know exactly what they're getting into when they come here with those defined expectations. You're here to be an adjunct instructor, you're here to supplement the training cadre. You're here to provide equipment and apparatus, and we want you to come out here and show your skill set and give them something to work with. And it's been really fun. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
and
we
what a
just kind of
great
had to look
way.
at it all around and say, what do we do, and how do we stay consistent, and how do we show them what the expectation is if we're not consistent. And so that gave us a really good opportunity to kind of self-reflect on what we truly wanted to be as a cadre as a whole. And so we would call it like our little morning huddles, where everybody be shining their boots, and because we want to display the expectation that we have for them, and we don't ask them to do things that we too wouldn't do ourselves, and to be a model of what that expectation is. So we get our little morning huddles and we would talk about the day and we talk about the drills we're going to run for the day, how everybody can be a part of it, what when someone can have a break, when someone needs to be where they need to be, and then all look each other over. And that piece of it has kind of brought back the fire station life back to the division, where we all kind of rely on each other and all work together for the same thing. And kind of keep that little piece of culture that you miss so much when you move into a division, kind of keeps it alive. Plus, our house captain, he makes sure we're at lunch. We have a family lunch every day. And so you might bring your own lunch, but we're all sitting together and we're all eating lunch because that's what you do. And so it's been really fun.
I love it. That's fantastic stuff. And when back to bringing crews that are online out to help with training, it's a great way for us to then ask those people, especially if they're SMEs that are teaching online training. Potentially, we have people that are teaching all over the country in some of this stuff. It's like, hey, is what we did today, did it meet what you need when they come out online? And so maybe, but hey, today's the very first day they've ever pulled hose, right? So like, which is that by the end of today, can they do the shoulder load and do rig to door deployments, right? Did we meet that intent? Yes or no? And if it's no, then we have a good hard look at ourselves as the leaders of that training and saying, okay, well, how can we make it better? Or where do we have to play catch up? Or is there one or two recruits that need a little bit of extra love, right? Or, how is that recruit interacting with other people? Like all of those sorts of things. It's a great way for us to keep the pulse versus being like, man, I feel like we crushed it. And then they went out online and we maybe did a spot survey and the officers are like, dude, we had to start basically all over on the one thing that I had to have them be able to do the very first day. They didn't know how to do. And so I think that that's a great way for us to also fact check and make sure that what we're doing, because when you're embedded in it, it's really, really hard to see. I mean, you bust your butt, every single day, and you're up early and you're there late. And it is hard to make sure that what we're doing is valuable for the people, not only for the recruits, but for the people that are then tasked with leading and growing those recruits to be quality, competent
Yeah,
firefighters.
to their greatest potential. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And I like how you also tied in, like, hey, when you go, working days as someplace calls it, or 40-hour or a division, to keep that thing, which is why a lot of us got into the fire service in the first place in that community. And I think we could easily chase a tangent here of like what happens when people are on injury leave or light duty. Can we maybe at least bring them out? And they might have lifting restrictions and all that sort of stuff, but like, hey man, I just want you to come out today and like interact with the recruits and just see what we're doing out here and give me a good detached perspective based on your rank and role. and tell us how we can get it better. And now they're involved as well. And that's a really, it's better than doing a data entry, I'll tell you that, you know.
I took some of those ideas too. We had lunch with the former recruits. We added that to our calendar to bring in some of our people that are current candidates just to talk to the class before they go out to suppression, kind of talk to them a little bit about the end of the academy, the transition, what the expectations are. Because before we always taught it, but we have a really old assessment of what that transition looked like. What does it look like now? And what are the things that affect that group of people now? Well, we know that culturally, this is a much higher family dynamic and family-oriented culture. So how do they transition, and what did that look like for their families and for their girlfriends and their newborn babies? And they're in the height of all of this fun in their life. And how do we make it so that they transition successfully? And they're talking to a group of people who've just went through it and had new babies and had, challenges. And we found that to be really beneficial. We had a lot of positive feedback from the recruits about how much that helped. And, how do we keep bridging those little gaps to make sure that they're successful when they leave here, so they go to the fire station and they have a happy, healthy career, so that way they can have a happy, healthy retirement, and get them off on the right foot where they're still motivated and they're excited and they feel that self-initiative to get into their equipment and into their tools regardless of what's happening around them, so that they know that they have that self-responsibility. So,
Yeah, I love it. It's a great way to for us to build cultures, right? Because like I've said a lot on this podcast, the fire service or emergency services or police service, whatever you're into, it belongs to us. It is ours now. And it's us to stop bitching and complaining about what we don't like and change those things, right? And like you mentioned, well, unfortunately, my answer is, well, that's the way that we've always done it. And that is not an answer, right? And we all know it's not an answer, but there's some things that we can change and we have to change it because we have some parts of the country have a recruitment and we certainly have a retention problem at some departments. It's very clearly when people are actively leaving your organization that you have a retention problem, right? And so that all starts with culture. And the easiest place for us to change culture for the better is to start with the newest people and to give them some tools and understand, like the guinea pig class came out and they probably will receive like, oh, why are you doing it that way? Right. And like, I don't know, because Cap taught me how to do it that way. What do you mean? Why am I doing it this way? But realize like 5, 6, 7 years from now, 5, 6, 7 recruit classes from now, like, you're going to have a lot of that guinea pig class that is, potentially acting up. They're for sure going to be driving. Some of them might be promoted. And so now we can start to change that culture in a positive way. And a really simple way to do that is let that former class come back and say, hey, I know you're about to go out online. This is super scary. On your first day, make sure you show up with breakfast. Be there at this time of day, right? Like, don't expect that everybody's gonna be super excited to see you, like all of those sorts of things. This is, your first couple months, this is what it should look like. Learn how to make coffee, like all of those sorts of things that we kind of forget when we're in the game that, man, oh man, those are huge stress points, which get in the way of actually performing what we showed up to do.
Definitely.
So a lot of really good stuff there for sure. And I like your succession planning as well of doing the hard work to make sure that that Google Drive is built with frameworks and calendars and stuff like that, where we can say, hey, overall, this worked really well. Let's flip these modules because, their knees are completely destroyed. Let's not put those things back to back to give their shoulders and their backs a break or our PT. We did a bunch of shoulder work during this one and they threw ladders all day. Well, that was stupid, right? Like, like,
How do we
and
let them recover and teach them how to bring it down?
yeah.
They're going to be at the height of everything. How do we teach them? Now it's time to settle. Now it's time to recover. Now it's time to rest. Now it's time to stretch. Now it's time to do those things. There's a whole bunch of stuff culturally that will continue to evolve. But you're right, just kind of taking that approach from here and trying to set them up with a framework to know how to take care of themselves. So that way, when they do look in the mirror, they know exactly who they are, and if they don't, where can they go to figure it out again and remember who it is and why they came here and why they want to be the person they want to be. And we implemented the guiding principles from the Firefighter Craftsmanship podcast into the last two classes. So they were tasked with filling that out over the Thanksgiving weekend. So I'm anxious to hear some feedback from them when we break into our companies tomorrow, because we'll dive into it in our companies and give people that place of self-reflection to kind of build that foundation of who they want to be. So that way they can go through this career and have that platform.
I love it. Yeah, and you're giving them permission to be introspective at the very
Yeah.
jump,
Yes.
right?
Yep.
And those things
Instead of
change.
reactive to that when they don't know who they are. Okay, by the way, go back and think about who you used to be. Okay, good luck.
Yeah, because this game changes you. And no matter what, it changes you. And like you
Yeah, and it
talked
doesn't
about,
have
like
to
your
be
son.
bad.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be bad, you know. And you talked about your son being brought into the world as Medic One, you know, and being like, and I think that resonates really well with me of like, I've certainly had in recent years times where I haven't been the greatest, you know, to be around at home and, you know, and take that out on the people that actually love you. And that's really, really hard to realize and then be like, man, I'm sorry. And here's what I'm going to work on to try to make that better. And having a thing like the guiding principles of why do you do? What's your why? You know, the Simon Sinek, what is your why? And that's a very simple exercise you can download. I'll link it in the show notes here as well. To just have that foundational of why do you exist? Why do you get up every day and go to work, regardless of what your job is? What are the things that are truly important to you? And then making sure that you're living true to your values because your actions, what you do, are your values. So you can say all day long, right? Like, oh, family first and blah, 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 blah. But you spend no time with your family. That's not actually one of your values. And so your actions speak louder than your words. What you do so it speaks so loudly that I cannot hear what you're saying.
I was just gonna say, I know what you say.
For sure. And that happens on personal accountability first. And
Yeah,
then it
everywhere.
grows all the way to an organization level, right? And so really, really great stuff here, Cap. I
Yeah,
really
thanks for
appreciate you
having
taking
me.
the time.
I know I gotta go PT now, so
Get after it. Yeah.
yeah.
How can people get a hold of you if you want them to?
I can be reached via email, which I can give you right now, or do you want me just
I'll
to
link it
have
in the show notes.
you?
How
Okay,
about that? That'll be
perfect.
a little bit
Yeah,
easier.
email's about the easiest way, because it's a little allows me to respond on my time. Sometimes I can be a little delayed. I got my hat into a lot of or hands into a lot of places. So, but yeah, email's about the best way.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for spending time and thank you for leading from your level and really trying to change it for the better. You know, your communities, even
Thank
the
you.
Nebraska football fans
Yeah,
appreciate
yeah.
even they appreciate it.
Deep
Yep.
wounds.
So
Pour some
it's
salt in there.
great stuff. Great stuff. Well, thanks for listening to the Firefighter Craftsmanship Podcast. Hopefully this resonates with you. Please share this with people that you think it might reach as well. You can reach us on LinkedIn at Kevin Housley, Instagram, Facebook at Firefighter Craftsmanship or firefightercraftsmanship.com. And stay smart.